want a podcast? I got a Smodcast. You want a podcast? I got a Smodcast. You want a podcast? I got a Smodcast. You wanna. Do you want a podcast? Do you want a show? Do you get your laughs from computer radio with this bro, Scotty Mo? It's about time to lose your shit. Everybody's progress quiz for that legend, Kevin Smith.
Welcome to Smodcast. I'm Kevin Smith. All right, we are still in conversation with the boys of TESD, man. With me again, as they were last week on Smodcast, as I was with them last week on their TESD podcast and also on their Patreon. We're back to finish our conversation. And I swear to you, it finishes with this episode and stuff. Here on Smodcast and on my YouTube channel where you're watching this. I'm sure a lot of people are like, holy shit, We never shoot Smodcast. So, like, this is huge. This is a big bonus for my people. I'm sure your people are used to seeing you because you guys shoot your Patreon all the time and you shoot little sketches and fucking movies and make records and shit. So much to talk about, kids. We've known each other for so long and stuff. And even though we've known each other for so long, and even though, as I was saying, later on the podcast, you'll hear it, and I don't get to complete that thought, but since we're doing the beginning of the podcast now, I can bend time and close the circle. And now I've spent so much time talking it up, I forget what I was going to fucking say. God damn it, what was it? What was I just talking about? Hour three is me going, wait a second, what the fuck was I just talking about? Which is going to be really ironic for the rest of this conversation. Walt may have just won his argument in advance, ladies and gentlemen. Should quit while I was ahead. In any event, the third hour of our conversation begins now. So there was that. That was the first. I think it was Jordan who raised that concern. Jordan was just like, "Well, Brian is now penniless," and I was like, "What do you mean? Brian's got all that." I literally said, "Brian's got all that comic book men money." And she goes, "Brian spends all his comic book men money," and I was like, "I guess that's probably right because he doesn't really have another job. Like Walter always had another job when comic book men left town." He was at the stash.
And he's responsible.
Yes. Yeah. You're the other guy who's just like, comic book men's gone, and I'm going to take 8 months off. which I utterly respected. I was like, that is so true and on brand and perfect for Brian. But so when it ended, Jordan was just like, Brian is penniless. And I'm like, that's not. I wasn't like, that's impossible because I knew that you didn't have another gig and shit. But I was like, no, really? And so I don't know if I spoke to you. Well, I had to speak to you about the cancellation of the show. Mm. So I think it was there that I was like, what are you going to do? Because Jordan was the first one that introduced the notion of money. And so when I spoke to you and I was like, the show's canceled and shit, I was like, what are you going to do about a job? And you're like, I don't fucking know. And this it thrilled me and made me laugh so hard because you went, you know, maybe they're still hiring at the Hazlitt Movie Theater. And I was like, Brian, you've been on fucking television. You can't go back to being a manager at a fucking movie theater. Although that would have been kind of hot. You know, people coming in and like, tearing tickets and they're like,
I'm were you in the entertainment industry still?
That would be a good line. Or it would have been the sad, remember when Jason was like fucking delivering pizza after Mallrats and people were like, weren't you in a movie? And he's like, yeah, $5. He still talks about it. It still haunts him. He like, yeah. You know, he's long past that, but he still carries that leg across. So I'm certainly not responsible for Brian's well-being, but like I had fattened up this calf with 7 seasons of a TV show by being like, there's always free money to be yourself, Brian. And then one day somebody pulled the plug.
It's never going to rain again, right?
Yeah, no, Brian, you're fucked. So the Patreon people have been working with Jordan, who runs our company, and trying to do a Kevin Smith Patreon. And I was just like, what was then just simply called a paywall. And paywall always turned me off as a concept because I'm like, well, I started this shit free, giving out free podcasts. I can't fucking suddenly start charging people. How we make our money, was my old philosophy, is from the live shows. It's very much like fucking, I don't want to call it IJ, Impractical Jokers, in their relationship with like the commercial. The show is a commercial. Yeah. The live show is the filthy fucking lucre. So same thing with the podcast for me. Historically, the podcast had always been, you know, we do ads, but the ads really just cover the fucking storage of the podcast. Nobody gets rich off the ads. Where the money was they listen to the show for free. And when we're in town, they come fucking see the show and pay us to see a live show. And we get to keep that money and stuff. When they were like, when Jordan was like, you should do this is smart. And she's like the smartest person in our world and stuff. So I was like, yeah, I get it. And like Mark Maron had went behind a paywall and a few podcasters had ducked behind the paywall. But I was still trying to hold out for like, you know, it's free and funny. That's our slogan. And fucking I can't like do it like that and stuff. And so she'd been riding me for like 4 months and like kind of built quasi versions of what it could be and always presented them like, this is what it could be. And I'm like, still, there's a price tag. I can't do it. This is what it could be. This is a price tag. I can't do it. And she's like, well, that's the point of the Patreon. It's like, these people can support your art. And I'm like, I get support for my fucking art elsewhere and stuff, blah, blah, blah. So this went on for a few years. Then all of a sudden this happens. And I was like, hey, man, why don't you do the Patreon thing with fucking Tezdy? I was like, because they got an audience that buys shit. It had everything to do with those two albums. Because I remember looking at those two albums and being like, the fucking balls of these kids. They made fucking records, which means somebody bought those records. Because if I know Flanagan, he ain't buying a bunch and letting them sit.
Well, yeah, when he...
But it was Quinn. Idea. Quinn was the one that drove the album.
Telling me, and I was like, no way, we're not doing albums. Well, we're on his eye.
And the moment you saw it work, you're like, move, Quinn. We're in the album business now.
Yeah. Final cast two, right? We're going to roast you.
But it was seeing that. It was seeing the records and realizing and like in conversation after conversation with Jordan, because she was always dialed into what you guys were doing and stuff. And she was like, their audience like pays for things. Like they, you know, she's like, your audience pays to see you when you're live, but like their audience is like more ardent, more hardcore than your audience. Like in a way it's tighter. Another word is smaller, but like that sounds dismissive, but it's a tighter group, but it falls into that direct philosophy of, if you can find 1,000 people to pay you one, you know, every month to do whatever it is you do, quit your job, because that is your fucking career. So at that point I was like, you know, this ain't for me, although it is now. We have that Kevin Smith Club and there's a paywall world that I'm in as well. But back when it started, I was like, this ain't for me. I was like, but this might be fucking perfect for like Tesdy and stuff like that. That also, well, that came directly from a stoner himself who was stoned when he said it. But then the person who built it with you guys, who walked you into Patreon and said, fuck up, is a massive fucking stoner herself. So in that long conversation, I was like, well, I hate to trace every nickel back to stoning, but like marijuana, I said, your money is marinated in marijuana.
It's dirty money.
To be fair though, Walt maintained the Walt like line where, you know, he wasn't like, you won me over fucking Kev, not with any of that. The one thing that did reach him though was a personal thing where I was like, I'll tell you right now, weed has probably helped save my marriage. Like it's, you know, I've been married over 20 fucking years and you've been married longer. So you're about the only other person in the room that could fucking talk to this. But like, it is not easy to maintain a relationship with somebody for that fucking long.
I'm doing fine.
Yeah. welcome, newbie. And also to be fair, like yours is a different situation because you came to it, not to put a fine point on it, but so late in life.
And you bought her on a website.
That as well. But you did. By the time you came to it, there was no like, we were young and dumb. What was I thinking? Or some such shit. You're old and dumb. Fucking dumb. And she was dumb enough to fucking marry you. And so old and dumb met and bam. And that was the one moment that reached him.
Yeah,
he was like, you know what?
Because that 3-hour conversation, 2 hours of it was you being like, I can talk about Spider-Man or $6 Million Man because I was high. And I'm like, Kev, I know you. You would talk about those things and you would still say all the things you did if you weren't stoned.
Yes.
So I wasn't going
to. But to be fair, I wasn't like, that's the only reason I did it.
That's true.
Because Walter, this was the part that was like, this to me was adorable and heartbreaking at the same time. Walter like was talking about me being an addict. And I was like, what are you fucking talking about? Because I don't, for the record, anybody who doesn't realize, I obviously don't subscribe to the theory that fucking weed is a drug and it's fucking very tame and shit like that. And it's not the 80s anymore. So I don't think like this is a hardcore fucking drug. But at one point he was like, when we were doing Comic Book Men, you couldn't fucking come upstairs and record before you had to go downstairs and smoke weed in order to come up to the table and fucking have a conversation. And I was like, oh my God, Walt, if you would ever just walk downstairs, you would have seen that was not the case. I was like, literally, I put on my makeup and I blazed a joint every fucking time. But it wasn't like, if I don't do this, I can't do that. It was like, this is amazing. this is going to take it to fucking paradise. Because I, as I explained to Walter, I was like, with Comic Book Man, I was able to close circles in time. I was able to loop time back. So the notion of, could you imagine if we got to sit around and just talk to each other?
That just sounds like a drug. That just sounds like...
It's not a drug. It's stoner talk, though, for sure. Yeah, definitely stoner talk.
Like I'm going,
but I was like, can you imagine... Could you imagine? Yes. Spidey went cosmic. I can go cosmic too. We're all cosmic. We eventually all go back into the cosmos, my friend. We're all just energy that goes back out. So you'll be there as well. You're cosmic too. And based on, and yes, and based on the curve we're on, your learning curve, you'll pick that up in 20 years.
What?
That like, that you'll sound like me in 20 years. You'll be like, you know what? Kev was right. I am cosmic.
By doing what?
Oh, I'm not saying weed, for okay. sure. For sure.
He has said that spices are a drug.
That was the one part of our conversation that I was glad I was not way privy to, is how, like, I remember you being against him, like, doing pills and shit, and I was in that with you, so I was like, you know, fucking, yeah, that's bad.
Everybody's against me.
Not me, I was giving you money.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I trust you.
And that's a good friend right there. But I didn't know that you went at him about, like, weed and shit like that, because I would have been like, weed, what? Like, that's, oh my but God, I, let him I, have his weed.
I don't know, I saw a different, I mean, it could have been other things, but, you know, that were causing a different bry. A different side of Brian, and it may probably was, but
in his case it was fucking pills, bro.
No, this was after pills
when he was just like, a weed smoker.
It was the Christmas before, and
it's more about mental instability.
Yeah, I think it's probably but I all You're I like, could see
I was frustrated
like,
with my friend because he was depressed.
No.
No, he was
how does it affect me?
No, that's my question.
I completely understood his reaction afterwards, because we went out.
Reaction
to
what? I'm missing a piece
to,
of data.
Not yet.
Did you have a fight or something?
No. We went out to get something to eat. Well, I'm talking about what spurred it on. We went out to get something. You're talking about this, right?
Yeah, it's all one big ugly enchilada.
Mm. We went out to get something to eat, and I was having a hard time with frustration and problems, like especially at restaurants and shit. So when
you're the guy that fucking, didn't you throw water at some lady for their cigarette at the table or some shit?
Well, she put water on me, so I dumped soda on her.
My bad.
But I have a low tolerance, so when somebody takes a long time to get to the table, I'm like, what the fuck? And you know, I'm like looking around, but it's like, it doesn't register what I'm doing. It registers with other people. So when, like, he got mad and he was like, oh, I'm never going out to eat with you ever again. And at the time I was like, why? What the fuck? But like after I got medicated and shit, it's like, oh, okay, now I understand. Like now I understand why he would be like, this is not something I want to be around.
Cause
it's weird. It's fucked up. Has been around it too.
Give me an example. Cause I don't think I've ever seen it. I'm not saying dredge it up, but what is it like? Like how different than you are you at that time?
I don't know. I would say pretty different. Yeah, pretty different.
And I guess you co-signed
that. Just in an angry way. And like irrational anger in a moment about something that's inconsequential. Ultimately, I should have, like, I was there with Gidim and Walt and Sunday Jeff, and we went out to eat.
From off camera, out of the voice of babes. Fucking day.
We went out to eat after having just delivered some money to an orphanage, because we did a Christmas thing and we went into an orphanage and gave them the money. And instead of just like being like, wow, that was fun, and basking in it, and sitting down there,
like, I've closed a loop in the cosmos.
Yeah.
I'm going cosmic.
Bending time. That's what I said to him. I was like, Walter, I was bending time.
Said it like 50,000 times in that conversation.
It was such a great notion. And he didn't react to it the first time. So I kept leaning in to be like, did you hear me say I'm bending time? It's a comic book thing. You should like this.
I gotta know. I know you just, before we end this podcast, I gotta know what happened when you hung up the call on your end. Like, what is that like to get yelled at by Walt Flanagan?
It wasn't yet, but I mean, it was a 3-hour call. And the first hour was, we were like battling about something completely unrelated to weed that then brought up fucking weed. So once the weed conversation started, then we went another 2 hours, which I was happy that it went longer with that conversation than the previous conversation. But I was, and I don't mean this in a dismissive way. You obviously know how much I worship you and shit like that, but I was incredibly bemused because I was like, I'm talking to somebody from the year 1982. Like, it sounded like somebody who had just listened to Nancy Reagan sit on Mr. T's lap and be like, don't do drugs, kids. And so the whole time I was like, doesn't he realize the whole country's about to go legal? Like, this shit is tame. It's like tamer than cigarettes.
You have to
beer.
Look at it from my point of view. I've seen people that I knew before they were doing this and didn't need this, and now it looks like they need it bad.
Like who? Like me? But do you feel I need it bad, or do you feel I like it bad?
I don't want to mention any names.
Well, that's the difference. Yeah. So I said to Walter, I was like, because Walter was like, I was a bad friend and I should have fucking told you and shit. And I said, Walt, if I'm an addict to anything, it's fucking food. And you never said shit to me when I was a big fat fuck. And he was like, "That's I'm not supposed to say shit to you." I said, I'm not saying you should, but I'm saying you can't feel bad about telling me like you shouldn't smoke weed, because you never fucking said, why are you eating like that? You're going to fucking die. I said, I wound up almost dying from fucking eating food. And I called Walt like last week. I had to take a week off of smoking weed because of I had periodontal surgery. So for a week.
Why can't you smoke weed?
They don't let you. Like,
I think it's the sucking action, right?
You can create an abscess through sucking, but you can also heat your gums and then they won't heal. And so.
Can you do edibles?
I could have, but I don't really fuck with edibles because they don't do anything for me. Because this doesn't really help my cause, but I usually have so much THC in my system that an edible won't really have an effect on me. So there it is. So I'm off smoking for like a week, and at one point I called him up.
As if he's been vindicated.
I know. As if like you're right, I'm wrong. So I called him up and we were talking about something, and I was just like, "Hey man, I just want you to know, I've been off weed for like 4 days, and what I really want." What I feel my addiction is sugar. Because even though I've had mouth work, like all I want are fucking sweets. Like I want to eat a cupcake so fucking badly. I said, weed, I'm not even thinking about, but the cupcake I fucking want and stuff. So that was weird, because there's no one in the world has ever been physically addicted to weed. It's impossible. You can't get addicted to weed.
I don't subscribe to that.
You don't have to, but science tells us that you literally cannot physically be dependent.
Science can be political too, though, and there could be many reasons why.
Not in this. What? Who's benefiting from that?
Stoner scientists.
But they're apparently losing, though, because the world is still run by non-stoner scientists who don't subscribe to that theory.
Not losing, because everything's going to be legal soon.
I hope so, fucking soon. Mm-hmm. We only have 12 states so far. But no, that's legit science, not crazy science. It's just you cannot physically. It's not like alcohol, which has a physical addictive component, or heroin, which is definitely physically addictive. I mean, if they throw you in a jail cell to dry out for the night, if you're a drinker, they will give you booze because you could fucking go and you could have a heart attack. You could go into withdrawals, physical withdrawals that could kill you. Heroin, they won't give you anything because you can ride that fucking out. You're going to be uncomfortable. You're going to throw up.
They give you Suboxone sometimes.
Well, but even if you're just in a drunk tank and they're like, fuck you, we're not giving you nothing. They'll give a guy who's a drunk a drink, but they won't give a junkie a drink. And nobody fucking gives anything to stoners because there's no physical dependence. So if I was like, I haven't smoked weed in 24 hours, I'd be like,
a mental dependency, you know?
Well, that's a great question. Do I have a mental dependency? I don't think so, because in the course of a week, I was never like, where's my fucking weed? Like, it wasn't the first thing that occurred to me. The first thing that occurred to me was comfort eating. That is my biggest, and really in my perspective, my only addiction after I stopped smoking cigarettes. And that was the other thing. You never were like, you shouldn't smoke cigarettes either. So it was cute that you were like, don't smoke weed. It was like Bambi coming at me.
It's kind of like foolish to like any a man as smart as you knows you shouldn't be smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, you're right. And I stopped, but it took me a while. And to be fair, it was stupid that I started. I started so late in life. It wasn't even a high school thing. I started at the flood at the Nor'easter. Because I fucking stayed, you know, in Highlands overnight in my house. It was underwater and shit like that. And then in the morning I got up and I was like, I might as well go to Quick Stop because it's depressing being in fucking Highlands because we were underwater. So I walked up the hill and fucking walked to Quick Stop because both of my cars were flooded. And when I got to Quick Stop to open up, the toppers didn't come because they too were fucking trapped in Manalapan or whatever the fuck. And there was a line of people in front of Quick Stop. As soon as I opened the door, every one of them were cigarettes. And so like by the end of that day, I was like, if people will come out in this fucking hellistic weather, cigarettes must be amazing. And I tried a Winston and then I slowly started smoking. I stopped smoking, and cigarettes, carcinogens definitely would have killed me. My doctor told me, he was just like, you have the LAD, my LAD was fully occluded, which means that's cholesterol and shit like that. So it was all Little Debbie, Swiss delights, and fucking oatmeal pies. Crap food was in my LAD. But my heart, he said, he's like, oh, I can tell that you used to be a smoker. And I was like, I used to be. I was like, I smoke weed. He's like, that don't count. I said, why? He goes, because it's about nicotine and carcinogens. And I was like, and you could tell? He's like, I could see that you used to. He's going, but it's clearing up. When was the last time you smoked a cigarette? I was like, oh, fucking 10 years ago and stuff. It's a good thing. He's like, because if you'd been a cigarette smoker and this happened, I could not have saved you. Your heart would have fucking died and stuff. Mm. So, and my doctor, and I've said it in a few places, but my not my cardiologist, but when I went to see my GP after the heart attack and shit, like after, like a week after I was out of the hospital and shit, I said, look, I didn't want to bring this up with my cardiologist, but I got a different relationship with the, with my GP and shit. She's cool. So I was like, I just need you to be honest with me. Cause I hadn't smoked weed at that point in over a week. Right. Cause I was like, maybe weed created this heart attack. I didn't know. I didn't think it was my unhealthy living condition in terms of what I ate. I was like, maybe weed did this. So I asked the doctor, I was like, before I had the heart attack that night, smoked a massive fucking cannon of a joint. I was like, could that have had anything to do with it? She goes, no, quite the opposite. Probably saved your life. And I was like, what the fuck do you mean? She was like, anybody told that they're having a heart attack, the first thing that happens is your blood pressure immediately fucking triples and compounds because you're like, I'm dying. And people wind up dying because of that. They panic themselves into a worse condition. She was like, you were so blazed that somebody told you you were about to die. And you were like, wow, man, like, well, I guess I've had a good life and things are sweet. Like, I was real introspective. I wasn't like, you gotta fucking save me. I was just like, well, like, I'm 47 and that's younger than my old man. He died at 67, a heart attack. I said, but like, I did cool shit and I had cool friends. I literally thought about the people at this table, everybody at this table, and on what I considered to be my deathbed, when I was told you have an 80% chance of dying tonight and only 20% chance of walking out. So at that point I was like, all right, odds are I'm not leaving this fucking place. So as I sat there while he was like, you know, mind you, I was on drugs, but the drugs they gave me, they put me on fentanyl. I didn't even know I was on drugs. After the words, I came out of the room and Jennifer was like, oh my God, how are you? I was like, I'm fine. She goes, you must be really high. I was like, they didn't give me nothing. I did that whole thing sober. And the guy was like, he's on fentanyl right now, like up to here. So I was on fentanyl. So I guess there was a drug component there involved and stuff, but they keep you in twilight. They don't put you out. So you're, I was able to talk to him the whole time. And like, I'm sure that irritated him and shit. Cause I was like literally narrating the end of what I considered to be the end of my life. And it wasn't weepy. It wasn't like, why? It wasn't Schindler's List where I was like, one more pin, this would have saved a life. I was like completely and totally satisfied. Like I was like, I it was better than I ever expected and better than I deserved and better than I was going to be given at birth. And everything was just like a fucking joyous run of like, we get to do this, we get to do this. And I was like, yeah, it ends fucking early and shit like that. But you had it so good. Don't be that asshole at the party that's like, you know, fucking, you got any more beer? Like, just leave when it's time to go. Like, fucking, I had a good time, push back from the table and fucking leave accordingly. And so I reached this place because I did. I'm no bullshit. I was going through my life and not like my life flashed before my eyes because there was no movie, but I was sitting there going like, at any second, this is it. 80% means that any second, like I go and there's no warning bell. There's no him going like, oh shit, look out. It's like the Widowmaker is, it has nothing to do with the skills of the surgeon. It has nothing to do with the health of the patient, the lifestyle one's lived. It's like you either go or you fucking don't. And there's an 80% chance you go. So the whole time I'm like, well, this is it and shit. And I did get to think about my whole life. And I thought about, I can't think about the adventure. And I always talk about my life at the beginning as if like it began with Clerks and stuff. And of course, I mean, professionally speaking, but it began before Clerks with you guys. So as I sat on the table, one of the things that literally made me at peace with potentially rejoining the cosmic was the fact that I was like, I literally said this, I bullshit you not. I was like, I had such good friends. Like, it made it okay to fucking stare into the face of the void and be like, all right, fucking, what more can you ask for? And then the motherfucker saved my life. And suddenly I was like, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? Because I was ready. I wasn't even like, I want to die. But I was at such utter peace in a way that like, you know, everyone's scared of death and shit. I don't care who you are. If somebody's like, don't fucking fear death. Nobody wants to die because nobody knows what's on the fucking other side. And I least of all didn't want to die because I've had a good fucking life. Like, I don't want to stop being Kevin Smith. It's fucking rocked and shit. But faced with the notion that it was going to happen, one of the things that made me go like, you know what? I can do this was the people at this table. That I would never come to that conclusion. if I wasn't a stoner. I wouldn't do that kind of thing. Like, you know, I told Walter at one point too, I was like, Walt, if I wasn't a stoner, we wouldn't even be friends anymore. Like people get into my line of work and they get competitive and they start cutting everyone out of their fucking lives. And I held on to my friends. That was a big part of my shtick, as we all know and stuff, and involved them all. But then there came a point in my life where fucking shit, the bottom fell out. And that was when, like, you know, post cop out and shit, where I was like, oh, nobody's into these antics anymore or anything like that. In that time, I had to come to grips with the fact that, like, it'll never be like it was, but it could potentially be something else. If I wasn't a stoner, I probably would have been like, fuck, that movie lost money. I gotta fucking make a movie that makes money and shit. I gotta get on that track where you make a fucking movie that makes money, and I gotta get one. And desperation breeds contempt and failure as well. So I'm not Tom Brady, where the whole world's going, you fucking suck. And you're like, watch me win the Super Bowl and shit. I don't have those skills. I've never, as much as I love Gretzky, I never identified with the skill level of a Gretzky. What I identified with is the humanity of a fucking Gretzky. I think that's the thing that I was most drawn to. So the notion of, like, you know, I have to look out for number one and make sure that this career keeps going. I would have fucking let everybody go. Like, if I wasn't a stoner, I would have fucking threw everyone over the fucking boat to save me and myself. And because I'm a stoner, you can see every fucking connection. And you can, what is it called again?
Bending time.
Thank you. You can bend time. I said it so many times, I don't even remember the phrase. You can bend time back to the essential important moments, because that's all it comes down to. Life comes down to very important moments that shape the rest of the moments.
I think at one point, before we both go cosmic,
yes,
we're going to have a conversation and you're going to realize that you didn't need weed to do all that.
If you could flip me, that'd be amazing.
And I'm not going to flip you. It's going to be something else, but I don't think it's going to be me.
Would it be?
Who knows what it'll be? But I think you'll come to the realization that, like, that you weren't a person that would throw everybody overboard to save your career, because I can't see how.
I don't know. I don't know, but you guys never saw Trapped Rat Kevin Smith. But you guys, seriously, you guys were out here, like, blissfully fucking living your lives on the East Coast, and I was dying a million deaths on the other side of the country, going, like, I'm irrelevant, nobody cares about me, fucking I'm done, the internet hates me. I had to deal with a lot of fucking, like, the world turned on me at one point. Before cancel culture began, I got fucking canceled twice. Once for fucking Too Fat to Fly, and once for, like, picking a fight with film critics, which both of those, I still fucking reap downside what's the opposite of benefits? I still...
Liabilities?
Liabilities. There's still liabilities that come out of those two experiences. Like, I was in a very bad place.
If that trap rat actually, you know, sunk,
yes,
it probably would have been a difficult period that would have stretched on. But eventually, the Kevin Smith that, you know, that I became friends with,
yes,
would have resurfaced. But would have realized that, like, I don't need to throw anybody over the board to be.
Perhaps by then it would have been too late, and I would have already thrown people overboard.
Possibly, but I mean, you would have probably if the people you threw overboard, you probably would have contacted and made it right.
Climb right the fuck back up on that boat.
Or, yeah, but by the time I would have contacted, it would have been like, hey, I'm 65. How you been? It's been 10 or 15 fucking years and stuff. And although it's not like all of us or any of us talk, well, you guys talk fucking all the time, but it's like, not like I see you on a regular basis, or we talk on a regular basis, and yet I still consider you some of my closest fucking friends in the world. So being that, if I had gotten to a place, and this hypothetical is going way down the road, where I did, like a trap rat, throw everybody overboard and shit, me coming back wouldn't have meant anything, because you guys would have been like, oh, this fucking guy, of course he comes back now, or something like that.
Maybe. I don't think so.
But I mean, that being neither here nor there, the in terms of what might have eventually happened if I came back and stuff. But I can tell you, I can tell you for a fact. I know that's what provides fucking fodder for the podcast normally, but I feel I feel, and since I'm in the position to make the call, I think my take is a little more accurate on it. I feel like there'd be no Patreon if I wasn't a stoner, not because I'm a stoner that came up with the idea. I wouldn't have given a shit that he's out of money and shit. I would have been like, what the fuck? I just lost a TV show. I'm out of fucking money. Fuck him. Everyone fend for themselves and shit. But because I was a stoner, I was like, what's going to happen to Bri? It was like the first fucking thing when somebody brought up the notion of money.
But that's saying to you, that's painting yourself an inaccurate picture of the man that I became friends with, though, who just cared about himself, though. Before,
but think about it. When you knew me, this version of Kevin Smith that thankfully never came to be would be the one that was so predicated on, I need to get back where I was. I need to be this guy that everyone loved and was the golden boy, that I would have eventually cast everything to the side to chase that goal. I know people that do it. I see it all the time in my line of work, man. People where it's no longer about I just want to tell a story. It's like, I got to get back on top. I got to fucking be, I got to make this. If I don't have a hit, I don't fucking matter. Being a stoner really allowed me to be like, it's all right that not everyone loves me anymore, because a lot of people still do, and I'll just work with them and for them. And so it gave me perspective, healthy perspective, that I wouldn't have had if I didn't have a haze of fucking smoke around me, because I'd be fucking forced to deal with
these negative feelings. But wouldn't you have come to that conclusion anyway, though?
Which conclusion?
That it's okay if they don't, if
not everybody loves me. Why? It never fucking occurred to me before that. You were the first person that made me go like, oh shit. That's why I fucking started hanging out with you and him. Because you're the first person I ever met that didn't give a fuck about what other people thought. And I fucking loved that. I was like, this guy, he don't give a shit. He's fucking like, he's got a mullet and he fucking reads comic books. He's older than me. I was like, he don't have a fucking license. And I do. And he does not
I
give
didn't
a
need
fuck.
A license. I didn't give a fuck. He did.
Fucking rightfully so. You had to get him Jr. myself driving you around New Jersey. But then in addition to that, there was a guy who also didn't give a fuck in a completely different way. While he did give a fuck on some ways, what I recognized in Brian was, oh my God, he's as embarrassed as being himself as I am, but Brian is much better at projecting out on others and distracting you from the fact that he doesn't like himself and stuff. And so I always thought that was incredibly charming. And he doesn't put people down to make himself feel better. But Brian,
ask Mike and Ming.
Yeah, well, yes, that's true. We do have a whole entire 7 seasons of a TV show with Brian doing exactly that. But it was both of your, for lack of a better description, commitment to being yourselves. I mean, this is a story you probably don't tell, but I used to tell it on stage all the time. I was like, I am so weak-willed and I so don't know who I am even to this day. I'll be 51 in June. I'm still fucking figuring it out. What I was attracted to about you and you was you knew exactly who the fuck you were. And as I say on stage all the time, I'm like, I, as somebody who didn't have that, being around that gave me support. That was something to aspire to. These guys don't give a fuck. They really don't give a fuck. And it's not like they're losers and they don't give a fuck, but it's like they just didn't give a fuck across the boards. The comics thing was huge because I'm like, but no, everyone fucking makes fun of adults that read comics. And he didn't fucking give a fuck. And you were just like, shit, you epitomize not giving a fuck. But deep down, you did give a fuck. And that's if you were just some person that was fuck everything, I don't think I would have been if you were a nihilist, I would have been well, Brian's fun once in a while, but I don't like to go to dinner with him because sometimes those conversations are pretty dark. But that's why Randall is the way he is. Randall is the most cynical human being in the world. And my favorite moment in anything I've ever made is that moment in Clerks 2 when he fucking goes, I buy the Quick Stop and reopen it myself. Because that's the guy who plays it like this forever, wearing his heart on his sleeve for the first time. And so you don't do that often. I can't point to a moment in life. Obviously your marriage is one of those moments, but I can't point to a moment in our history where it's Brian fucking profoundly said or did this and shit. But I always knew that that was at work in you. Recognizes like, and I saw that in you. I was like, oh, he feels as awkward about himself as I feel about myself. But the difference is he's fast, quick, and clever. And so fucking, you'll never know how he feels about himself. And in fact, he includes himself in on the joke and puts himself down at the same time. That's what's brilliant about it. So not only can he fucking ratify his false conceptions about himself by being like, I'm a fucking loser too, But it also makes him bulletproof to attack anybody else in the room. Because it's like, you can't attack Ming. He's like, why? He attacks himself. He literally just attacked himself. So of course he can go after the next guy. Those character traits fashioned and built me. I don't get to do the things that I do without that. When you're like, if you didn't smoke weed, you would have done those things. Bullshit. I know that for a fact. Because I know, like, I wouldn't have even gotten as far as I did without weed, without fucking people to be like, yes, that is how I can be. Yes, that is how I can be. And that gave me the fucking fortitude to be like, maybe I can make a movie. Something I was so terrified to say to both of you, because I was terrified that you'd be like, you know, that's fucking stupid. And it wouldn't have been stupid. It would have been the 90s or 80s equivalent for that word. But I would have been talked out of it so easily, because I'm like, they're fucking right, man. If they think it's stupid, then fucking why are we doing this? And I shouldn't be thinking about this. So I kept it quiet as long as I could until I was a week away from going to film school. And then I was like, I'm going to film school because I want to make a movie. I'm going to come home. We're all going to make a movie together. And the two of them looked at me as if I was like, I'm going to slip under the table and suck both of your dicks. And you're going to have a sword fight in my mouth. Whoever comes first loves me the most and shit. They just had this fucking look like, what are you talking about and shit. And I had to kind of explain that, like, on the down low, I've been applying to film schools because I didn't want you to find out. I didn't want Brian to find out that I tried stand up one day, which is in the documentary, which made me laugh so hard. In Malcolm's doc, at one point, you're like, years later, he told me he went and did stand up. I'm glad I didn't know. I wouldn't have approved. But it was, you know, you take what's useful and you perhaps overlook what's not. And what was not useful, of course, was two guys who were like, don't do anything at the risk of looking stupid. Because this was a person that wanted to enter a field that's all about, look at me, I'm stupid. Like, you know, entertainment is essentially fucking that. So I took, like, my key character traits or the things that I would hang my new version of myself on, because this version of Kevin Smith doesn't even resemble the one that Ernie went to high school with. And this present version of Kevin Smith probably resembles a little more closely the version of Kevin Smith 2.0 or whatever that fucking launched when we met and stuff like that. But it was the fortitude that I chose to cling to. I didn't cling to the weakness of, like, he doesn't like himself. Which always befuddled me, because I'm like, most fascinating fucking man I've ever met. How does he not love himself like the rest of the world? How does he not have the joy that he derives from others? People in his presence just fucking get happy and shit like that. And then it's like, it's back to the old, like, Pagliacci sad clown thing. Like the guy who goes to the fucking, oh, I'm so sad, doctor, I'm so depressed. And it's like, well, you should go see the great fucking Pagliacci. He's an amazing clown in town. And you're like, but doctor, I am Pagliacci. I left that behind. And in your case, I left some of the more judgy shit behind. And I focused on fucking, like, the things about you that I was like, that's who I want to be. That's who I want to be. That's why I know that if you had ever said, don't go to film school, don't fucking smoke weed, I would have been like, he's right, I shouldn't do these things.
I didn't do any of those things.
Thank God. Absolutely. Yeah. But I wasn't the one that brought it up. You brought it up when we had that conversation where you're like, I fucking should have told you. And it has haunted me ever since in a way of like, I'm like, I can't, if he ever lost a moment's sleep or ever fucking thought about this beyond the conversation we had, it was wasted time, because nothing but positive has come from smoking weed in my life. And I think I've illustrated that, like, pretty well. But also, I could point to the fact that, like, I don't know, like, have you ever gotten in a fight when you've been stoned?
No, it has a very calming effect.
It really does. And again, I ain't trying to sell you and shit, but it's like, it's not what we were told in the 80s. And it's not OxyContin or fucking heroin. And it's not even liquor, which, you know, don't get me started. I could fucking do, I'll become you on the subject of fucking alcohol. And I don't mean owning a brewery. I don't mean owning a brewery.
You mean the hard stuff, right?
Yes, I'm talking about the harder liquors. Yeah. Liquors with a Q, not made by Q.
Beer's like the weed of liquor.
Beer is the absolute weed of liquors. But it is, it's like, you know, that's where I go hard and shit, where I'm like, well, fucking booze will kill a motherfucker and shit like that, because it's literal poison. So I could get on a high horse about that and stuff. But the thought that, like, that you would have been troubled in any way, shape, or form of, like, I should have fucking done something, I could have interceded, A, would have made for a less happy Kevin Smith, who might not be alive, because I'd still be smoking cigarettes, so I'd probably die of that fucking Widowmaker and shit. But also, he might be wealthy, but you guys would be fucking broke. Like, because all of the jobs came from weed.
Yeah, I don't know.
As green as this wall is, that's as green as your money is, my friend.
Again, I think that at one day we'll come to have a conversation where you'll see that the weed was not.
His ability to dismiss the last half hour.
Totally fine. Last half hour? Fucking last 25 years. But regardless, he's absolutely right. We will have a conversation one day. I don't know that I'll be like, you're right.
You put too much emphasis and importance upon weed that, and didn't give yourself enough credit that you could have done all those things.
I'll do you one better than that. You take weed out of it. I don't give myself enough credit, period. Like, you know, fucking Jordan says it all the time. She's just like, I've met 500 people that made Clerks, and none of them are you, according to you. Because I'm always like, without this motherfucker, Clerks don't happen. Without this motherfucker, Clerks don't happen. Without this motherfucker. So I'm always like fucking doing that kind of shit. But I feel like this is how I explained it to Walt. And it's an analogy that I've become very fond of. I could eat spaghetti plain. Like, spaghetti is edible and physically satisfying. Why would I ever eat spaghetti without sauce? Sauce just improves it. It doesn't mean I need the sauce to eat the spaghetti, but my God, it just makes it better. It makes it so much vastly better. The closing, what was it called again? Bending Time reference was all about me going like, we're literally sitting around a table and getting paid money to sit around and talk about comic books. That's a fucking magic trick. And not everyone is ever going to pull that magic trick off. Smoking weed was not like, this is the only way the magic trick works. Smoking weed was my way of being like, thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Like, that was a fucking magic trick to pull off. So I enjoyed getting high before I sat around and talked, because it was like, it made a great thing even better. But I also, as I pointed out during the conversation, and Walter touched on it, I talked about like, I could sit there and fucking soliloquize about Batman and Spider-Man, blah, blah, blah. And Walter's right. I could always talk very passionately about things I was passionate about. However, being that we were new to the TV business and the game was about content, creating as much content as possible for them to shave down into the shows, being a loquacious stoner helped that show. If I had not been a stoner, I'm not going to say we wouldn't have made it 7 seasons, but it would not be the show it was, because I'd be like, that's interesting. What about you, Brian?
I mean, literally, but you realize literally for the last hour, every single thing you equate to weed, though.
Yes.
Everything, yes. It feels like.
Yes.
That's not normal.
It's not, but my whole life's not normal. Clerks ain't normal. Fucking Dogma's not normal. The fact that a kid from Highlands became like fucking internationally known, and I get to dress like a child for my living.
But there's thousands, that's not and normal. Thousands of Kevin Smiths out there in other fields.
How dare you? I'm telling you how special you are. Like, you're one of a million, buddy. Yes, there are many of us. And guess what? A lot of us are stoners as well. I'm not saying it's necessary at all. And I don't say it's the key, but I'm just saying like, it really did allow all of this shit to happen.
It didn't. You fucking were, stone cold sober when you made Clerks.
Yes.
You
wrote Clerks. I'm talking about all this shit. Like, we're in a room with your green screen in it. I can draw you in half and I'll do it for another 2 hours, a direct line from weed to this. We're talking about your world. Yes, but Clerks happened. But again, Clerks is a magic trick, right? And even though I keep spending that coin that I've, you know, fucking created by saying the word, I say Clerks every day and have for like 27 years. Clerks ran out of cash a long fucking time ago. And then I made Mallrats and that fucking died. And then Chasing Amy brought me back, and then Dogma, Jay and Sambal strike back, Jersey Girl kills me again. Clerks 2 brings me kind of back. Zach and Miri Make a Porno doesn't kill my career, but kills me inside, where I'm like, I am this guy. I'll never be Apatow. That was the whole year where I was like, Apatow does what I do and he makes more money. Yeah. And he does it good too. And yes.
No,
good. I understand. That's true. But believe me, I'm happy to be me. But there was a time in my life before I was a stoner where I spent a lot of fucking time thinking about like, why Judd Apatow and why not me? Just like in 1995 when Mallrats died, I spent an inordinate amount of time worried about the career of Ed Burns.
I remember that.
Yes. Remember he that. Haunted me. He was my fucking, like, you know, Lex Luthor. And the guy, like, had nothing, didn't say anything about me. It wasn't a personal battle, but he had the next Clerks, and that movie made more money.
What was it?
Brothers McMullen. And that made $10 million. We made $3 million. And suddenly he was the new golden boy and shit. And plus he's more attractive, like Tom Brady good looking. And he also has a wife.
Tom Brady.
He has a model wife just like Tom Brady.
He's bigger than Giselle?
What is her name? Christy Turlington.
Yeah,
pretty up there. Yeah, she's right up there.
I don't know my supermodels other than Giselle.
You're like, I know one supermodel and she belongs to the GOAT. Yes, but wait, how did we get on to fucking supermodels?
Tom Brady.
No.
Ed Burns. So Ed Burns like haunted me and was something that would like take joy out of my life because I was like, well, what's he doing? I spent the first half of my career looking over the fence, worried that I was going to lose everything that I have. Because once you get something, you know, I had nothing and then I had success. And then you never want to fucking lose success. And I had the sweetest success, which was like first time out the gate with an amateurish, like spit and glue effort. The world was like, you're a fucking genius. And I'm like, thank you. And then the next year, we're like, Ed Burns is a genius. And I'm like, wait, that two of these things can't be true. I saw that fucking movie and shit. And so suddenly I start judging myself against others. When I became a stoner, I've never judged myself against anybody else. Now I'm content to be Kevin Smith. Now I'm content to be like you guys were, like to be like, I know who I am. Like, and I'm getting a better understanding of it now. You guys know who you fucking are and stuff. Now I'm at a place where like, oh, I know who I am. I'm Mr. Compassion. I'm Mr. Collaboration. I'm Mr. Hope. I'm Mr. You know, Ben Time, Cosmic. Like, those are the things that like are more important to me now than like, where am I in the directorial pyramid? I don't even fucking think of myself as a director anymore. And to be fair, most critics don't either. But I spin so many other plates, and that also came from weed. That freedom allowed me to like let go of movies in a way where I could interact with them where it wasn't desperation. Like, if I didn't have weed and it didn't lead to everything else and shit like that, my only source of income would be fucking movies. And so I'd be treating the thing I love like an ATM, like a prostitute and shit. And that was the one thing that bugged me about the movie business in the beginning. I was like, I love this shit so much, but it's like, I literally have to do it now. I'm dependent on it because this is what pays my rent. Becoming a stoner allowed me to be like, movies are just something I also do, but I can make my money standing on a stage talking. Now, I did go on stage and talk for long before I was a stoner. We all know there are a series of videos of me doing it, but I submit to you, watch An Evening with Kevin Smith and then watch like anything I've done in the last like 10 fucking years. I'm so laconic and fucking like, I can't be bothered to answer your question, but I'll tell the Superman story one more time. Like, it's a kid who don't appreciate it because he's so scared it's all going to fucking go away. And he was also fucking scared of like, are they going to think I'm a fucking idiot or something? Him going like, I don't want to do comic book men because what if they make us look like assholes, was something that I completely identified with. And at a time would have made me go, you're right, let's not fucking do this, because the worst thing that could happen is we might look like assholes. But being a stoner, I was like, I don't care. We're going to have a fucking TV show. We're going to have a fucking TV show with my fucking friends. We're going to sit around. We're going to fucking talk about comics in my own comic book store. It's amazing. So it only helped. One day we may have a discussion where I'm like, ah, oh, you're right, I didn't need it. But that would be like saying, I didn't need spaghetti sauce, but fucking I loved it. I'm glad spaghetti sauce existed because it made spaghetti so much better. Butter noodles, that's for other people. Spaghetti sauce for me. That was the conversation. 2 hours of the conversation. But it was, and it didn't end with him going like, you're right.
You won't end that way tonight. You didn't
have to tell us that, Kev. We do. As sure as if we were listening to the conversation.
So true. These two guys are sitting there going, you poor son of a bitch. Like, and I know what act three
actually
is.
I'm like, he only got off on an hour, bitch.
Two. To be fair, it was two. But it was also like, you know, one of those things where I was like, oh my God, like, I've known this guy for close to 30 years, if not more than this point, 30 years and shit. And like, I could count on exactly maybe two fingers the amount of times we've ever like pitched voices and fucking like went at each other or something like that. And that's where this came from. Like, came from a place of like, I'm so fucking mad at you, I'm gonna tell you the truth. Which to me was also like, that I was scared in the minute because I was like, what is the truth? Like, because I honestly, the thing I was most terrified about, I was so relieved when you were like, I should have fucking stopped you from smoking weed, because I honestly thought you were gonna be like, I never fucking liked you and I think you're a fucking idiot. That would have fucking destroyed me, because I was like, I knew it. I knew it all this time. I gotta get high.
Fucking head first.
I got a better time. Better time.
Is that true?
Yes.
Because that does play into like your the feeling of like not knowing, because how could you not know that I would never say that though?
Because I mean, as much as we're friends, it's not like I see you every day. Right. I've moved away like literally 20 years ago. And if you really trace all of this back, Clerks, fucking Smodcast, Tesdy, Comic Book Men, not so much Impractical Jokers. Although, you know,
it's in the mix.
Yeah.
I didn't smoke one of those big fat ones. You might be able to come up and be like, I got IJ too.
Yes. I don't need fucking smoke to come up with IJ too. That's just me going, Quinn, can we do it again? But with my friends?
Yeah. Yeah.
It is, it is. I imagine.
Yeah, there's just, I mean, I don't know. That is troubling, though, that you would even.
Honestly, I was scared about that because you were so angry. And also the way you were setting it up, the setup.
That was probably the angriest call that we'll probably ever have in our life.
Probably. Yeah. I fucking hope so, because I don't know if I can make it through another one. But I'll be honest with you, the first hour was more harrowing than the second two. The second two made the first hour palatable, because afterwards, like for the first hour, I was like, oh my god, we're literally fucking fighting. I can't remember fucking last time I've raised my voice with this guy. But when it went into, when you got so mad that you were like, fuck you, you're a stoner addict, everything got peaceful, because I was like, oh no, I'm not. Like, you know, he's got me on the other thing, but here, I don't think I'm that at all. And it became a warmer conversation to me, even though, you know, it was filled with me defending myself and our lives and all the money we've made in the last fucking 10 years. But it was still, it came from a place of concern. Like at the end of the day, like we're all having a laugh and shit, but it literally did come from a place of concern. You may have been mad in the moment, but fucking you were mad enough to be like, I'm going to fucking spill a truth on you. And here's my truth is I'm concerned about you. And it could be paired with judgment, and as much as you shouldn't be doing this or whatever the fuck. But it ultimately at the center was concern, and that took a load off, because I swear to God, that was one of the things that went, as you were, because you said it twice and you're like, I'm not gonna say it. You know what, I'm just gonna say it. No, I'm not gonna say it. And then you're like, I'm fucking saying it. And I was like, he's that would be, that's honestly the worst thing that I could imagine, is like, our friendship has been a fraud, like fucking it's all predicated on I don't fucking know you or something like that. And I was like, I don't think I can handle that. You going like, you smoke weed. I'm like, oh, I can handle this, because I do. And I can talk about it to great lengths and stuff like that. But the first hour was tough. Second, hour two and three was, I found illuminating. And honestly, I feel one of the best conversations we've had in years, because I'm like, he doesn't have to agree with me, but he knows me a little better now. As opposed to a guy from the other side of the country going like, he's smoking too much weed and not having a single fucking perception of, other than seeing me.
There was a bit more weight to why you were doing it than other than just like, I can't talk about Spider-Man unless I'm high.
Which, to be fair, that's not what I said at all. I would never say that. You know, Mallrats is proof that that's fucking not true. But I said it was great that I was a stoner, particularly during that, because I would go on fucking like very grandiloquently, to the point where I looked across the table and the two of you were like, fucking come on, just fucking wrap it up. We get it. You fucking, yes, wrap it up and shit. So I know like that's what I was referring to. Not that like I could never talk about this shit until I found weed. But yes, a very charming moment in our friendship, a very necessary fucking moment. And honestly, a necessary conversation, not so much for what was talked about, but just that we talked that long as well. Not just like, how are you? Good. How's the store? Great. What is Tesdy up to? This. And just information conveyance. This was the kind of conversation we used to have. Remember when we sat around fucking Quick Stop when me and him weren't talking at all?
Yeah.
Walter would come to Quick Stop, like, you know, and at 9 o'clock, and we'd close at 10:30. And me, him, and sometimes Ed would be sitting there till 2 a.m, either in Quick Stop or in the parking lot right outside, with him going, you gotta call Bri. You have to be the one to call Brian. I was like, fuck, he should call me. And like, he'll never do that. He's not that guy. You are that guy. And I'm like, well, I'm weak. And he's like, well, I'm not weak, but like, you should call him. Because he's not going to fucking call you. And did that for like hours. That became like one of the constant conversations in the year that Brian and I didn't really speak and stuff. And then I called Brian after I went to the forum, and I was like, hey, you got to come to this. And Brian went, and he was like, I ain't doing this. It was like one of the things where you're like, you graduate, you got to invite people. And like, it's a, you know, not a scam, but it's a pyramid. They're like, you bring in fucking more and you bring in more. So I brought him and Mosier. Mosier went and did the forum, but Brian never did.
I went there and I was like, this is fucking, this bullshit's weird. Yes. This is like new agey shit that I can't get behind.
Very cynical. His reaction would have been, the only reaction that would have been worse or more implausible would be his. If I was like, let's listen to this lady talk about how she's going to destroy us in 3 days and remake us. Paul was like, fuck this.
You didn't ever ask me to go.
Well, you know, I used it to be able to speak to him for the first time.
Yeah.
So like that was
good thing.
It wasn't so much like, I think Brian will love this, but it allowed me to call up Brian and be like, hey, how are you? And I was like, oh, how are you? And to Brian's infinite credit, you were right. For a year, you've been like, just fucking call him. If you just reach out, everything will go back to normal as quickly as, I swear to you. I was like, no, he has to do the calling. And when I did call him, everything did go back to normal as quickly as possible. Like fucking so much so that he was like, yeah, I'll take a ride up to this thing with you. And then do you remember driving home and like there was a prostitute on the side of the road and you started talking to her? You're like, pull over, let's talk to this toothless prostitute. And Scott Mosier had just met Brian and he's just like, is he always like this? I'm like, yeah, that's his thing. He's like, hookers? I'm like, no, just talking to people. Poking around and shit.
She was in the middle of nowhere. It was like on the side of a highway in a parking lot.
And you
lot.
Gave her money too. And not like, here's money for a blowjob. You're like, take this money, go home. Stop doing this, he said and shit. And she had multiple missing teeth. Yeah. And so even though he kindly gave her money too, he was like kindly suggesting fucking dental work, I remember at the time as well. He was like, you know, you should really see a dentist, but not in a fucking shitty mocking way. Because I remember driving home, Scott was just like, why did he talk to her like that? And I'm like, he's interested in people. He likes talking to people. Liking talking to people is what has gotten us all so far. All of us spend our lives spending money earned from simply talking to people. And that circle has gotten much smaller. In the case of Quinn, he at least talks to total strangers in the world. By virtue of his work, he's forced to talk to strangers.
Yeah. Look like an asshole all the time.
And it fucking pays.
These
cats,
the idea,
though.
I like, oh, go ahead.
Created your own world. You literally have your own fiefdom where you never have to worry. And I don't think you do anymore, but it's probably still built into your DNA. You never have to worried about looking like an asshole or somebody being like, well, he's fucking idiots and shit. Your audience like would watch you read the phone book, to borrow a fucking tired old cliche. They would, well, here, your audience would watch you fucking read about the violent deaths of their loved ones and still you'd get a laugh out of them where they'd be like, oh, Brian, you've done it again. It is, it's incredibly unique. And I'm sure you guys don't spend a lot of time staring at it and stuff like that. Because, you know, you're in the thick of it. But somebody who's an outsider, who's been witness to it the whole time, is nothing but fucking impressive. The things that you guys have built for yourselves, the things that I built with your fucking help, and who knows what's fucking next. That's the thing. It's like, you couldn't have even seen a green screen wall 25 years ago or fucking 10 years ago or 5 years ago. And yet here we sit next to a green screen wall. What happens 5 years from now? I'm not asking for.
Maybe all four walls are green.
That's when we go cosmic. There it is, folks. If you've been listening to this very long ass podcast, you can watch this very long ass podcast in one of two places. It starts over on our YouTube channel. But the rest of it, you got to watch. And we get into good shit and whatnot. If you're hearing this, the rest of it, you can watch at the Tell 'Em Steve Dave Patreon. What is it called?
Yeah, it's patreon.com/TellEmSteveDave.
Is that what it is? I know Ralph's is like patreon.com, the Ralph Report or something like that. The address one more time. Most of the audience, of course, that listens to fucking Smodcast, there's a big crossover with Tezzy. However, there are a bunch of people that are not. So this is a chance for sales.
What's up with them, man?
So I know. Believe me, after all this, they've listened to.
Enlightened. Yes. They are.
They don't know how to bend time.
You guys are bending time. Yeah. But they're fucking missing out.
Give them the address again where they can go.
It's patreon.com/TellEmSteveDave. And there's so much good shit on there. Merchandise and videos and podcasts.
You're not kidding. It ain't just hype. He ain't just saying that in a way of like, oh, fucking come see our shit. Like they literally have.
Bank too, right? It's like it's not like you only get this month's shit.
It's like 3 years worth of
3 years worth of stuff.
Is that right? So if they join now, do they get like an old lamp and shit?
No. Like the content
is new. I was like, how many lamps did you make?
We got a lot of skulls, not a lot of lamps.
That's what it'll say on your grave. You got a lot of skulls, not a lot of lamps. 300 different fucking pieces
of
media.
Content. Yeah.
Unbelievable, man. All from fucking talk. All from just sitting around and fucking talking.
All from weed.
And yeah. weed as well. Second half came from weed, as we all know. I won't go down the rabbit hole again.
I don't think any of the 300 pieces of content have anybody's under the influence, are they? Well, I don't know you guys.
But it was all born under the influence. So, all born under the influence. Yeah. Doesn't matter. It's tainted from the start.
Certainly the audience.
Yes. Yeah. Don't judge them too hard, man. Good paying customers. Oh, what is Tattletales?
Tattletales
was
great.
Yeah, we did a riff on Tattletales.
Is Tattletales the game show?
Yeah.
So what was the riff?
I think, well, we did a take on it.
Right.
With a bunch of people in our universe. And
it was Get Him and his fake wife.
There's some drinking going on that set for the very first time ever.
And was it in the around the table?
It was outside the table, outside the set.
So yeah, it didn't touch the inner sanctum, though.
Oh, I mean, it was difficult. It was difficult to deal with.
I co-sign with you. I co-sign with you. I drunks. That's my fucking. That's my kryptonite. That's when I lose. That's when I get judgy and shit. I'm like, you shouldn't fucking be doing that.
But when it's your job to dress up like you're from the 70s and drink, like, come on.
Wait, who was the drinker?
That was Frank Five.
It was all. I think everybody was drinking on it except
Mary
for
Beth
me.
Was drinking, and Mary was drinking. Yeah, I wasn't.
It rare is the man who can walk through this life and find joy absolutely unassisted. Happy is the man who can do that. Yeah. Hats off to you, Walt Flanagan. Thank the rest you. Of us need a lot of spaghetti sauce to get through this fire. you have just been listening to me do one of my favorite things in the world, ladies and gentlemen. And the thing that when I fucking leave this world, I'll probably be like, God, I should have done that more. But it always makes me happy to know that they're sitting around and doing it still in my absence and stuff. Talking to you guys. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Walter.
Thank you. Yeah,
thank you for taking the ball and fucking running with it. Like, it's a joy to watch TESD continue to fucking grow. And I look forward to, seeing the other three walls become green. That, ladies and gentlemen, is Smodcast for this week, man. I'm Kevin Smith.
Ry Johnson.
Brian Quinn.
Walt Flanagan.
You go bend time, kids. Have a week.
This has been a Smodco Internet production. Sip. Only at smodcast.com.